Are you done making noise?
No. Okay, now I'm done.
Jesus. Anyways, what's up, Real Champs podcast listeners? I'm Wishtak. I'm here with Huston. And today, for the first time on the Real Champs podcast, we finally secured the bag. We have a guest. And his name is Alex. I'll let him introduce himself.
Hey, folks. My name's Alex McVeigh. I'm a former expert slash editor at the Real Champs. It's been a while. I was on the podcast, the old school version, but it's good to be back here talking about some Real Madrid with my old friends.
It's great to have you. Huston, turn your light.
I muted it. I'm sorry.
Every single time. It's a noise disturbance. Anyway, I was going to say it's great to have you back, Alex. Before we start and before Huston goes off on a tangent, I just want to say thank you to Alex for putting me on the Real Champs. It's a big reason why I get to be I ended up a part of this team. So thank you for that. It's super cool having you here. And like you said, it's going to be dope to talk some Real Madrid. Huston, is there anything your big mouth needs to say before we start?
I was just going to add a nice little sentimental thing to what you said. Alex kind of kept us both on the team because obviously I was going to depart. He kept me in. He brought you in. So he's the real OG here.
Yeah, real it's good to see what you all have done with the website since I've been gone, and that y'all are holding down the ship and keeping the podcast thing going. So
it's great to hear.
We're trying to make the ship a cruise ship and just add more layers to it and everything. So
yeah, we're not making the Titanic. So there you go.
Be the Titanic because that obviously crashed, Huston. Jesus.
Well, that was the joke, Mojtag.
Well, it was a horrible joke. It was a horrible joke.
Dark humor, get with it. It's 2019. Don't be a snowflake.
Oh my god, I'm not a snowflake. I'm not even. Okay, I was gonna say, have you seen those new cruise ships in like the Caribbean? They look so dope.
Yeah, but can you afford it?
Yeah, obviously. I've been. What are you talking about?
If anyone wants some money, ask for his PayPal. DM the Twitter.
Yeah, cash at me.
It's good to see nothing's changed around here.
No, I think Huston and I just ended up like hating each other more and more as
it's a love hate relationship. There's just more hate than there is love.
Oh no, you secretly love each other. You know it. It's all love. I feel it emanating from this Skype call.
Over the interweb. All right. Anyways, now that all that's done. Before we talk about tomorrow's match against Barcelona, there's so many things to talk about, and it's always great to hear Alex's more wise and calculated opinions than maybe some of the rest of us. But Alex, what is the one thing that has shocked you this season in a positive light and also in a negative?
Okay, all right. The positive is obviously Vinicius. I'm like, to be perfectly honest, like, you know, I've had a bunch of new work obligations going on. So like during the first part of the season, I think I had checked out a little bit, but I've been watching a lot more games in the past few weeks to months. And like, there is one headline coming out of Real Madrid and it is Vinicius Jr. This kid is on fire. Like he just shows a spark and an excitement and an energy that, it couldn't be more of a contrast from what we're seeing from players like Gareth Bale, for example, who is a phenom when he wants to turn it on, but just doesn't seem to have that energy and an excitement, that joy of playing. And Vinicius does that every single day on the pitch. And I also think that's huge in a world where, you know, this is the first year Real Madrid are without Cristiano Ronaldo. Ronaldo is doing his thing down at Juventus. And the one sort of like X factor that produced for the squad is, well, what does that mean for Benzema? Karim Benzema was known for being a player who did not really excel on his own, per se. He had moments of glory here and there, but really, he was Cristiano Ronaldo's strike partner. And he was good because he helped make Cristiano Ronaldo look good. And so we're kind of wondering, like, what was actually going to happen? What's the plan with Benzema moving forward, given that he is sort of not an ideal, you know, out and out striker, but obviously the path forward lies through Vinicius and through their just sort of like combination of Benzema's, you know, being kind of an old he at this point, he's a veteran, he's wily, he knows what he's doing. He's always had sort of that brilliant awareness of space and the ability to make himself a nuisance for the purpose of other players. And you add this youthful energy and pace that Vinicius is bringing, and it's like, that is 100% the most exciting thing. As far as a negative, I mean, where do we even start? I think it's just got to be the consistency. You know, since Lopetegui departed, we're seeing a lot of good things under Solari, and we're starting to see the offense click a little bit. You know, the advent of Reguilón and his sort of move to the front of the squad has been great, but it just never seems consistent. You never get the feeling that you're going into any match really with a guarantee. And, you know, in seasons past, even when Real Madrid wasn't playing great, you sort of had that guarantee that they would find something at the end of it. And I just don't have that optimism anymore in the squad. I'm just not surprised by any losses. And so it's really caused me to kind of have to adjust my approach to watching the team this season, where, you know, in years past, I sort of hung my hat on every win and loss, and, you know, really, really kind of felt the losses in a big way. And I, you know, at this point, especially after the Copa del Rey exit, I'm just sort of ready to treat this season as an experimental season of what the world past Cristiano Ronaldo looks like. And, you know, my expectations are that low. So that's got to be the low point, going from, you know, back-to-back-to-back Champions League winner to I'm not even really sure what we're doing in the league. That's probably the low point.
Well, you unpacked a whole lot there. There's, like, more than just hand luggage. It was, like, carry-on, suitcases, the whole freaking cargo compartment. That was a lot. But I think Hassan and I both agree, in previous podcasts, we've both just been so amazed in everything that Vinicius has done. And I think almost every game he's played, we've kind of just dissected and just been in awe of, you know, whatever he does in every third of the pitch. He's somehow so creative and flamboyant and in some respect. And then you look at the stats, he's the leading assister of Real Madrid. I mean, to be 18 and to be the leading assist man at Real Madrid, you have people like Toni Kroos in that team, Luka Modric, and you have 12 assists. I think it's absolutely marvelous. And then just like you said, Karim Benzema was the strike partner of Cristiano, and now he's just, I don't know, he's like a different person. Some people even say he's just like how he was when he was back in Ligue 1 before he came to Real Madrid. 20 goals this season and 7 assists. May I just have a little bit of a personal gloat session?
Oh, here we go.
Yeah, here we go. I did say at the beginning of the season, I believe Karim Benzema will reach 30 goals in this season. He's at 20 now, so we're 10 away with how many games are it? 14 matches left or something?
Still a fair few, yeah. You've also still got the Champions League to go, so he's still in 2 competitions.
Yeah, at least games to go. So, you know what? It's plausible. Nothing's impossible.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I don't think it's completely impossible that he gets very close to that or hits it. But yeah, no, largely agree. Vinicius has been a breath of fresh air in the team, because we've not seen anyone who sort of dared to just continually run at the opposition, regardless whether he's successful or not, and just take people on. I haven't seen anyone like that since Ronaldo first joined. All those years ago now, nearly a decade ago. And so the other thing has been the main negative, sort of linking on to what Alex said about the managerial change. I just think that's more to do with the poor planning that sort of has been done at the top of the club, where in regards to not really thinking about the potential departures of obviously managers and stars. I think they're at that kind of point where, you know, like when you're in bed and you wake up in the middle of the night because your glass of water's gone empty, and you sort of reaching out, trying to find, you know, where the door is to get to the kitchen, but you can't quite find the doorknob. I feel like that's where Madrid are at the moment. They're sort of just searching, trying to find that one spot before it clicks. And I think that's hopefully going to be this summer, fingers crossed. Strange analogy, I know, but there we'll go with it.
No, it's a good one. What do you guys think? So both of you have talked about, you know, the managerial situation at Real Madrid. Do you guys think that the whole Lopetegui situation, he was kind of set up for failure to begin with? Did it kind of seem like he was a filler from the get-go? It was kind of just an interim position. He probably was never really going to stay on unless Real Madrid miraculously, you know, had at least one, if not a double.
Yeah, I think he was definitely a shot in the dark, per se, because at the end of the day, going from international level management to club management, they're two completely different parallels. You're dealing with completely different beats every single day. And the other thing is, he was never really linked with the job to start with. He wasn't really a candidate. So I think the only reason that he was appointed is because they couldn't get anybody else. That's my take on it, at least, anyway. I don't know if any of you guys differ with that.
I'm just so perplexed by the whole way that was handled. Like, I don't necessarily think Real Madrid did anything wrong in seeking him out before the World Cup, but it also doesn't feel like they did anything right about it either.
Yeah, definitely.
Like I don't really think they violated any sort of like moral or ethical principles, and a lot of the like moaning and complaining from the culés of the world about how terrible it was for the Spanish national team, I don't really buy that. But I also just kind of like don't understand like what were they trying to accomplish, both in bringing him on in general and in bringing him on when they did and adding all of that extra drama? It all just seemed so strange.
It's Florentino Perez for you. It's written all over it. I have to make a statement of some sort. It's always the way that Perez has gone, always.
I guess. But it just, you know, it didn't seem like it was setting
very well thought out.
Yeah, and it wasn't setting Lopetegui up for success. It created an environment where, you know, Real Madrid is the manager is already going to be under the microscope and under the hot seat. And this, I think, just created an environment where that's amplified, because he was turning down one of his dream jobs for another dream job. And there's going to be added levels of scrutiny when that's the case, and especially when it comes along with major implications for the Spanish national team and the world of Spanish football, that it just seemed a tall ask for Lopetegui to take over this team in such a transitional period. And then also to, you know, have Cristiano Ronaldo leave and to not really buy the necessary parts to replace that big of an output of goals. So I think that, like, I think maybe Lopetegui could have worked, but there were so many factors working against him that I'm surprised it didn't. I'm not surprised it didn't.
Yeah, I don't think anyone is at this point. Carry on, watch that, by the way.
No. I was just going to say, I just wanted to get Alex's take on it, because when Solari was appointed manager of Real Madrid, this is way back a while before when we had Christopher and Anthony on the podcast as well, and I think all of us kind of just shat all over Solari. It was
my exact words. As soon as you asked me the question, I said, what is Solari going to be? I said, a fucking disaster. Bleep that out.
and I think we kind of just went off on a tangent as to how horrible we thought he would be, especially because he wasn't that great with the Castilla side either. But quickly, in a couple of sentences, what were your thoughts of the appointment initially, and how do you see Solari and his managerial role now with Real Madrid?
Sure. Initially, I was confused. It really seemed like the definition of a caretaker manager, that this was not somebody who was going to be planning for the long term, that it was just us trying to find a solution for the short term, somebody familiar with the club, somebody built into the club's infrastructure and hierarchy that could take things over. And then, you know, I don't, remind me if he actually did sign a longer term contract, correct?
Yeah,
exactly. Which is just another sort of like perplexing move from Uncle Flo here as to like what the goal is. And I think so I was initially confused, and now my latest reaction has been, it's fine. He's fine. That's it. fine. Just fine. I can't say anything more positive. I'm not going to say anything more negative because my expectations have already been shattered this season. Up is down, down is up. Real Madrid is sort of mediocre, and I don't know how to feel about that. So, like, Solari is fine. But my big feeling is just that, like, this ain't going to cut it for the long term. We have got to find somebody better. So maybe I'm not giving Solari enough credit. Maybe I need to see what he could do with a full sort of summer transfer window, but it just seems like he is doing fine, which is not good enough for a club the quality of Real Madrid.
Hassan, just before you answer, to the listeners, if you don't know a whole lot about Alex, which I don't imagine many of you would, no offense to you, Alex, but Alex literally just used a four-letter word. Keep in mind, Alex is a PhD. So trust me, when he says something is just fine, for the rest of non as educated people as Mr. McVeigh is, that probably
That's Dr. McVeigh to you.
No, sorry, my bad. I forgot you have a PhD, Dr. McVeigh.
Oh, God.
I can't believe I just got flamed on my own podcast.
in literally three words. Have a shame.
You invited me back. What did you expect?
Oh, my God. I don't know what I was thinking. Anyway, Austin, answer the same question and adding to it, if you guys were Uncle Flo, as Alex put it, are you keeping Solari on or are you definitely looking for somebody new?
Okay, so my initial thoughts when he was first appointed, as I said earlier, I'm not going to repeat it because you have to blurt it out again.
What do
you
want to repeat for that?
Okay, I won't repeat it. Agree with Alex, which is a short-term sort of response to just trying to get the season steady because the boat was literally sinking. The boat was quite literally Titanic by this point, as we mentioned earlier. Rapidly sinking, and they needed somebody just to literally rope it back in and just keep it steady, which at first it didn't seem that was going to happen. They were really sort of pragmatic football being played, you know, 1-0, really tight results, defensive, ugly, hideous, every single horrible adjective you can think of. It was that since the turn of the year, and that this sort of more relates to how he's doing now, I'd say he's sort of turned it around. There's been some pros to his reign. He's obviously implemented Vinicius, which has just been an absolute blessing in disguise. Seen Reguilón come into it. Odriozola's getting minutes. Ceballos is getting minutes. So he's rotating the system really well, which I quite like. He's putting in some more attacking performances. Performances in big games have been better. Against Atletico Madrid, phenomenal. The first Copa del Rey leg against Barcelona was good. The performance largely in the second leg was good by that 23 minutes of just complete shithousery. And what goes on Saturday, well, who the bloody hell well knows. But as in terms of what goes forward from here, I don't think he'll be kept on. I'll be amazed. Reports everywhere suggesting now that he's run out of credit and Uncle Flo is very tired of this whole scenario and has decided that he's probably going to get in a more established name, I guess you could say that. I imagine the man he's going to chase in the summer, and someone that I personally chase, will be Mauricio Pochettino at Tottenham.
Yes,
the Poch.
Yes,
good old Poch boy. We need that guy.
I don't know how I feel though, because I've seen people say this. I used to be a huge fan of him, and definitely thought he was the one. And I'm not saying he isn't the one. I definitely think he has a potential to be. But are we just going off of potentially what he's done or what he's achieved so far?
What he's achieved so far is phenomenal. He's got
phenomenal,
half the budget of those top six clubs.
It's proven is what I'm saying. It's like it's like when you're in school.
I disagree. Right? I think he is kind of proven.
But it's like when you're in school. You can answer questions while you're in class or whatever. And yeah, you could seem smart, but I mean, at the end of the day, like your final mark comes from your exam. Like it's not the final piece, and the exam is the trophy. He hasn't won
that. Yeah, of course. I knew you were going to allude to that eventually. But I think to take Tottenham Hotspur from the banter club of the Sherwood era that they were, where they were scraping, you know, Europa League just about, occasionally getting Champions League if they were lucky, playing shit football, full of terrible players. To take them from that to perennial title challengers, Champions League football every damn year, making decent runs in the Champions League. He's come up against some tough opposition. I mean, he absolutely trounced us in the group stage. Was that last season? It was last season, wasn't it? Where they beat us 3-1 away.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, so he absolutely trounced us last season. He's done very well, and to do it with absolutely pretty much a shoestring budget, in my opinion. I think his net spend is like stupidly low compared to the other top six clubs.
Yeah, Tottenham brought basically no one, or it was either actually no one or basically no one in this summer.
They basically bought nobody. They literally bought nobody.
And has managed to keep pace with a rampant Pep Guardiola Manchester City side, plus a Liverpool side that has finally figured out what to do in both defense and attack, and a Liverpool side that spent quite a pretty sum of money between last winter window and this summer window, and filled the like big holes that they needed to in their squad, like the goalkeeper position, getting Virgil van Dijk fully navigated in, their additions to midfield, which are substantial additions that cost a lot of money, and Mauricio Pochettino is still just rolling with Dele Alli, Heung-Min Son, and Harry Kane, and Christian Eriksen, and calling it a day. We don't need to.
He's got really good ability at turning players into world-class stars. Dele Alli, who the hell had heard of Dele Alli before he signed for Tottenham Hotspur? It's a good eye for moves. Eriksen came from Ajax on a really, really small fee, turned him around, turned him into a world-class star. Now he's been looked at as the replacement of Luka Modric. Crazy. Harry Kane has turned him into a serial scorer. Davinson Sanchez has turned him into one of the best young centre-backs in the world. The list just goes on and on and on and on. He's done absolute wonders with that side. Absolute wonders, and to do it again with the budget he's got, and he's definitely nurtured talent for sure, and I think he'd definitely do really well with, you know, the likes of Vinicius, the likes of Ceballos, all these sort of players. I reckon he's the perfect man, not only to solidify an ethos in Madrid, because that's one thing we've lacked an identity in that team for such a long time. Lopetegui tried to implement it, but he wasn't given the time. I don't think he really had the squad to do it either. Nor do I think he was quite the man to do it either, but that's another debate for another day. But Pochettino can implement a style of football on this side. He'll be given a budget to, you know, to use, and it'd be great to see what he could do with, you know, a budget the size of City, etc., etc. And it'll be interesting just to see what he does at, you know, a club like Madrid, really. I think he's made for a job like that. I think he's literally ready to step up to that now.
Yeah, I think the one sort of question mark hanging over that is that, I mean, it is true. I think this sort of gets to Mushtaq's point that it really is a step up. It's not a step up that I think is beyond the pale for what Mauricio Pochettino is available to and what he can do. I think it's a realistic step up, but he will have to prove himself at a higher level, because there were all of the comments coming out that, you know, from him about how the trophies aren't the most important thing, and just the change of culture and the level of expectation will be something different, such that it is okay to be at Tottenham Hotspur and show progress, to show consistent development, to show a good use of the budget, to show, steady earning of Champions League places and gradual improvement in the performance of the Champions League, and to not win trophies. That is not okay at Real Madrid. Real Madrid has set the standards so high that even in their off seasons, you have to be deep in the Champions League, if not hunting for the Champions League trophy. And I think there's going to be an added expectation to actually overtake Barcelona in the league and also the Copa del Rey. Maybe I'm just saying that because that's wound is still fresh. But I think I think he is ready for the shift up in expectations, but we should not pretend as if there is not a change in level of expectation that would be required from him.
Well, just before we keep going through the managerial process, I think we can all agree, if we all had to come to a consensus and pick someone, it would have to be the Poch. And then I guess before we get into what should happen in this coming transfer window, just looking back at last transfer window, obviously we took some losses. We signed Vinny, we signed Orriozola, we signed a couple other kids. brought people up from the Castilla, such as Fede and Reguilon. But what do you think was the biggest mistake from last summer transfer window? And do you think maybe this is Perez trying to push this whole new idea of not grassroots football, but more so taking players from the academy and bringing them up into the first team, kind of like what Barcelona has been, I guess, lauded for or applauded for in recent years, whereas we've been considered just this Galactico team that just goes and whips up the cream of the crop from all over Europe.
Well, to be fair, sorry to break any viewers' hearts who are expecting the club to go absolutely rampaging into the summer window spending money galore. From what I've been reading a lot of lately is Perez is going to buy a Galactico, not some Galacticos. It'll be a Galactico, and then it will be still young, prospectable signings, which I don't disagree with. I think all we really need is a consistent goal scorer up top, and then just a few potential sort of stars in mould of a centre-back, perhaps, and maybe another midfield if you really want to push out. But saying that, if James Rodriguez is coming back, then you don't even need one of those. So for me, I think it'll literally just be a case of another centre-back and the striker. And I think I really do believe that's all the squad really needs. I don't think they need to go and spend a stupid amount of money. I mean, we just managed to outplay Barcelona for a large period of time over two legs. Yeah, okay, the result wasn't ideal, but that was more to do with an element of luck and obviously putting the ball in the net. So if we can get someone that's capable of putting the ball in the net, would that tie have been very different? I do think so.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there are also going to be some serious questions, question marks. A lot of these questions about who is coming in have to be understood in the context of who will be going out.
Which yeah, means, definitely.
Like we would have to answer the Isco question first, which so a subject not, there.
Yeah, food is fans already.
Yes.
I mean, like. Because it's easy to say that we only have one or two pieces that we need, but if Isco is unhappy, then that creates room where you start asking questions like, okay, Luka Modric has been slowing down a little bit this season, still one of the best players in the world. Toni Kroos has looked okay for the most part, but not quite the imperious, robotic, mechanic perfection that we've seen from him in seasons past. And then if Isco is unhappy and wants to find greener pastures elsewhere, then you start having serious questions about the midfield, which might have ripple effects throughout the rest of the squad. And I also think Bale is going to be a huge X factor. Mushak was asking the question of what the sort of like biggest regret or mistake was from the summer transfer window. I don't necessarily have a regret. I was trying to be cautiously optimistic about the fact that we didn't really bring in anyone huge. And my X factor there was always going to be Gareth Bale. Because Bale has been waiting for a season out of the limelight of Cristiano Ronaldo to step up and show that he could be the person to lead this team. And it just kind of fell short. It's not that he's been bad per se. He's had good moments, but if we were expecting Bale to flourish into the next Cristiano Ronaldo or to really kind of take the dynamic performances that we saw in the Champions League final and to apply that as his day-to-day standard to approaching the club, we did not see that. And so I don't think the summer was necessarily a mistake. I think it was a gamble and that the gamble didn't quite pay off.
This season, Gareth Bale has played 32 games, of which he's come on as a substitute for 9 of them. He scored 13 goals and 5 assists in over 2,000 minutes. So he's certainly up there. He's the second highest goal scorer of Real Madrid, and he's pretty up there in assists as well. And it doesn't really seem like he's contributed a whole lot, just given how much he has been absent.
It comes down to when he's presented those goals and assists as well. That also makes a massive... Obviously, you can look at someone's goals and assists and you can see they scored 25, but they scored most of them against relegation fodder. And that's where you sort of hit a slippery slope then of how meaningful are those contributions. That's the problem that I've had with Bale this season is Yeah, he's provided some goals. Yeah, absolutely no taking that away from him. But in the moments that we've needed him, so let's look at the Clasico, for example, the first leg, when he had the ball at his feet, there was an open net, and he decided to take two touches and then shoot with his right foot. Literally could have decided to tie right there if he really wanted to, but he decided to, for some reason, cock it up. It's those moments that I feel are going to come back and really bite him on the arse. I personally think he's going to be sold in the summer. I would be amazed if he's still at the club at the start of next season. Really would be amazed.
That was simply going to be my question. Alex, should Gareth Bale be sold, yes or no?
Oh, how are you going to do this to me?
Yeah.
Do it!
If you all search the Real Champs webpage for some of my old articles on Gareth Bale, search therealchamps.com for Alex McVay Gareth Bale, and you could go way back and see that I've been stanning Gary Bale for a long time. And we had vicious arguments back and forth between me and Hassan, and me and a number of contributors on the squad who were trying to say, no, of course not you, but who were trying to say that we've got to sell Gareth Bale. Gareth Bale is overrated. And every time Gareth Bale does this thing where every time you try to write him off and say Gareth Bale is done, he's washed up, he's not good enough, he does something absolutely amazing. And that Champions League final performance where he came on as a sub and then scored just magnificent goal, that bicycle kick was amazing. And it was okay, we get it. Ronaldo's was great too, but that was in a Champions League final and sealed the deal for Real Madrid in the final when we needed him to. And that was like some big cojones, Gareth Bale putting it all on the line, showing that he is a superstar, which almost it's hard to judge Gareth Bale because you want to judge him not against every other player on the pitch, but against the best version of Gareth Bale that you know exists, which is just a phenom. And so I think it's probably time to let Gareth Bale move on, which, you know, me 3 years ago would have said that was blasphemy, would have had nothing to do with it, that Gareth Bale, you know, should retire at Real Madrid. But I think it's maybe time to let Gareth Bale find a place to rediscover his best football, because it just doesn't seem to be happening at Real Madrid. And he just doesn't seem to be enjoying life here. Maybe this is some armchair psychology or trying to read body language, which I know is always, that's problematic. Like you can't really tell what people are thinking based just off looking at them. But like, the eye test has not been there for Gareth Bale for a while, despite the occasional magnificent performances. So gun to my head, sell him or no. I say yes, sell him, try to get somebody else in.
Well, he consumes 350,000 euros a week, not a month, ladies and gentlemen, a flipping week, which I think is absurd. And at this point, like Alex said, you kind of got to think about it from both angles. One is that, yes, he's contributed a lot to the team in the very big moments, and he's definitely a big reason why Real Madrid has several of the trophies that they've won in the last half decade or so. But then it's like, do you really want to keep paying somebody to show up just at that time on the off chance that they actually will, and then not have somebody who is going to, you know, be consistent and be there for you when you really need it? I don't know.
I think the problem is now, obviously, as Alex said beforehand, when you've written him off before, he's come back and done something outrageously good. But I think that point now is past. I don't think he's got that in his locker to do. I'm not saying he's finished in that sense. I'm saying at Madrid, it doesn't seem he has the confidence to do that anymore. Because this season, when he's had the opportunity to do those stupendous things, it's like he freezes and thinks, oh, crap, here I am. What do I do? It's like even with simple things like knocking the ball past somebody and sprinting, I just haven't seen him do that this year. It's like he's scared to do that anymore. I think it's just a case of he's mentally shot now. And I think that's just a result of obviously the pressure he's been under over the last few years. But I do think the time to move him on is now, really. I think last season was probably the best time to move him on after the final. But definitely now is 110% the time to let him go. Because you'll recoup some of the money. I don't think you'll recoup all of it. 60 to 80 million possibly max.
Nothing.
Yeah, something's better than nothing. Because I think I read a report not so long ago that Perez was holding out for like 100 million. And I was like, you're not going to get that. You have to be realistic. You're just not going to get that.
Who knows though? Like with the transfer market is now so outrageously inflated that you could find somebody desperate enough to do that
in January. Maybe I don't think in the summer they would. And you'd have to consider different factors. He's now I think he'll be 29 this summer.
Yeah, but Alex, if you are desperate enough to do it, you probably don't have the money to purchase him. Because if you're at that level of desperation, I think chances are you've already secured other players who have, you know, the caliber and getting the job done that you need.
I'm just trying to think who would, in my mind right now, be realistically desperate enough. So the only few clubs that I can spring to mind, Chelsea have a transfer ban upcoming and have just signed Christian Pulisic. Spurs probably can't afford him because of the new stadium. Manchester United don't need him because they've got enough wide talent in the way of Martial, Rashford, etc., etc. He wouldn't go to Arsenal. Manchester City don't need him. Who else is there?
Well, there's three other leagues.
I can't see him in France, realistically. PSG don't need him. He's not going to go anywhere else in Spain.
I wouldn't put it past PSG, though.
I don't see where he'd fit in there. Plus, why would he go there, really?
I think the only situation in which Bale goes to PSG is the nightmarish situation that means that Neymar is coming the other way.
Oh, you call it a nightmare. That's interesting.
I agree with you, though. I want Neymar nowhere near this squad, please. Like,
I don't doubt his talent. He's a world-class talent. But from what I've read, that injury he keeps suffering at this stage of the year every year is a recurring thing. He's going to suffer that for a long time.
He doesn't want to miss his sister's birthday. Leave him alone, guys.
For fuck's sake.
asshole an injury?
Attitude is woeful. I mean, yeah, that apparently it is. I suffer from it a lot.
Austin takes the Ballon d'Or for that every January.
Yeah, but... I don't like his attitude. His attitude is terrible. But again, world class talent. You can't take that away from him. But if we were sending Bale to PSG, I'd be like, we'll give you Bale 100 million and give us Mbappe. I want that.
Yep,
I want that
yep.
kid.
I don't think
100 million
2 years ago as well. I honestly think that our biggest mistake was not this past transfer window, but was two summers ago, missing out on Mbappe and his move to PSG. A bunch of people have said that it was like, it was just financially impossible, which...
I guess, screw
the new stadium, sign a bloody player. Jesus Christ, Florentino.
It's not just that, it's just a case of he saw the situation at Madrid, he was like, I'm not going to get into that team. Which I don't know why he thought that, because I think he would have benched anybody that was on that right-hand side all day. I don't know why he thought that. I don't know who was whispering his advice into his ear, but the guy's a clinical moron.
Finish up.
But yeah, it definitely was the biggest mistake Madrid have made in the last few years, was not signing Mbappe, 110%.
Another hot take. Obviously, Thibaut Courtois came into this Real Madrid squad last summer. He's played majority of the games in net for Real Madrid. Keylor Navas has kind of just been like, here and there and everywhere in between, I guess, as and when he was needed. What do you guys think of it?
I think people need to stop being so harsh on Courtois. Yeah, okay, he had a shaky start, but he's leveled himself out now. He's had some good games. Plus, like, I can guarantee you right now, if Thibaut Courtois had played in the Copa del Rey second leg and obviously conceded those three goals, the shitstorm on social media would have been unbelievable.
But I feel like that's happening both ways. I always see people on Twitter saying, if Courtois started this game and this loss happened, then he would have gotten shat on. If Keylor started this game and this happened, he'd have got shot. Don't you think?
I don't think Keylor would have got shot on as much because obviously there's a big sort of love affair for Navas out there, and I respect what he's done.
Rightfully so.
Okay. I knew Alex was going to say that.
Club legend, Keylor Navas.
Yeah, no, he is a club legend for what he's contributed. Don't doubt it one bit. But signing Courtois is a good move because you're future proofing the position between the six. Because obviously, yeah, I know Navas hasn't declined, but you do have to look towards the future sometimes. And yeah, I think he's probably going to move on at the end of the season too. But we've got Lunin, it looks like a good prospect, to be fair. So yeah, there is that. But I think he's been a good enough signing. And for what he cost, you'd be stupid not to have signed him. It was peanuts. It was literally peanuts.
Alex, just hit this question, and then I have one more for you before we guys wrap this up and move on to tomorrow's little pre-match thing. What do you think of this whole goalie situation at Madrid?
I think it's one of those good problems to have, that we've got two world-class keepers who the fan base are undecided upon who they like or hate most. You know, Real Madrid fans, they're not even happy when their ice cream's cold. You can't really like please everyone on Twitter, and like Twitter is sort of like an outrage producing machine anyway, so I wouldn't put too much stock into that. I think that you know, Keylor Navas is a phenomenal keeper who has proved his worth and his loyalty to the club of riding out multiple periods of uncertainty, saying that he would fight for his spot regardless of what happens. When it looked like he was almost on his way out, he still managed to keep a level head about him, come back from injuries, come back from surgeries. And so there's something very reliable about having him as sort of like our steady Eddie veteran, who has been through us through these title winning moments of our history. And then you add Thibaut Courtois as another option, and in Thibaut Courtois you've got somebody with title winning experience from multiple clubs, who is an amazing shot stopper. And I think you see some of Thibaut Courtois' inconsistencies. He is a big gangly dude, and so sometimes it's easy to get the ball under his legs, but he is also just so lightning quick and makes hard stops that his ability to just stand up a defender and make a shot from or a stop from point blank range is really second to none. So I think you take some of the good with I think you take some of the bad with the good for Thibaut Courtois. I think we're in a great position as far as keepers go. Like we have so many question marks surrounding our squad that getting Thibaut Courtois in when, you know, he was obviously unhappy at Chelsea, had been talking about wanting to move to Madrid for a long time, it just seems like a win-win to me. I have no problem with the keeper situation. I've been saying for a while that Real Madrid could do very well to mimic the situation that, for example, Barcelona had a few years ago, where Ter Stegen and I think it was Bravo were both on their team competing for minutes. You could also reference, I think it was Moya and Oblak at Atletico Madrid a few years back. So there are numerous examples in the contemporary European super club ecosystem teams that are really deep at the keeper position, and where there is no sort of clear, or even if there is a clear number one, that you've got an extraordinarily strong backup keeper. So I think we're in a good spot goalkeeper wise.
Last question before we get into the pre-match. One incredible thing about this Real Madrid squad, irrespective of how its form has been across all three cups this season, is the average age of this team. It's quite young, and there's a lot of players who are very young. I mean, we do have some who are getting up there, but it's great to know that there's all these kids in this team who are essentially the next generation of Real Madrid. For example, we have Sergi Reguilón, as we mentioned, Odriozola and Fede Valverde, which we also mentioned. You also have Marcos Llorente, who's 24, Javi Sanchez, Cristo, Brahim Diaz is a bit of an odd one, Jesus Vallejo has been a little questionable, Borja isn't with Madrid, But that being said, outside of Vinicius Jr., who is your player under 25? Actually, I just realized who Austin's going to pick. Who is your favorite player under 25 that you are super excited to see continue with Real Madrid?
He says he thinks he knows who I'm going to pick. I just want to know who he thinks I'm going to say.
It's okay. Let's see if you can say it first.
I was going to say Sergio Reguilón.
Really? I thought it was going to be Danny Ceballos.
He's been a little bit pipped out of the spot because of Reguilón's ridiculous form. I do think he's the long-term successor to Marcelo. I think Akpar's going to have a very hard time when he does return to Madrid getting back into that squad, because Reguilón's superior to him defensively, and I would argue better than him offensively at least. But that's it. That's a hot debate for another day. But yeah, he's definitely... It's between him, Ceballos, and Fede Valverde. I'm excited for all three of them. I just like the directness of Fede Valverde. He's just... Every time he gets on the ball, he's just like a determined little kid. He's just like, I'm gonna run at this, and just run and run and run. And he just goes. He's off like the clappers. Obviously, Ceballos, everyone knows my love affair for Ceballos. He's wondrous. He does everything you want from a midfielder. He defends, he attacks, breaks lines. Could dribble with the best of them. So yeah, there's not much that he can't do. So yeah, I've cheated a bit, but yeah, so there's three.
Literally just ripped apart the whole exam and wrote your own. Alex, who's your player to watch under 25?
Under 25, it's definitely got to be Marcos Llorente. What a kid.
He's good. He's very good.
It was really interesting to watch kind of the unfolding dynamics going on between him and Casemiro when Casemiro was out, I think, with an injury problem for a while.
They're trading season. Injuries. One gets fit, the other goes injured. One gets injured, the other gets fit.
Yeah, yeah. Have we ever seen them in the same room together? Are we sure they're not actually the same person? no, but it brings sort of a different set of skills, but I thought just... was a marvelous replacement for Casemiro. And this is on the back of Casemiro continuing to kind of disprove the haters and Casemiro showing that he is, you know, one of the best center defensive midfielders in the world time and time again. And Marcos Llorente just stepped up to the plate and said, no, actually, I'm going to give you some serious competition for that spot. and to do it with really, you know, my first year in the spotlight at Real Madrid. I know he's kind of been hovering around for a while, but like, this is really his time to shine. And he has not looked like the moment was too big for him at all. And while we're talking about young players, the question was players under the age of 25. Can we talk about the fact that Rafa Varane is only 25 years old?
I'm sorry. Yeah, that's terrifying.
World Cup winner Rafael Varane is only 25 years old and has got a pedigree and a CV like some retired glory players. Like,
yeah, he's got four just Champions outrageous. League, the World Cup. He's got Liga under his belt. God, what's he not got? I believe that you'll probably win the Euros in a couple of years' time. Has a good chance to retain the World Cup in Qatar. What more can you say about him? He's a phenom. He's a phenom.
He's a seasoned player that in such a refined product, you don't really look at him and think, oh, he must be young. You just see him and think, I'm sure he's about 27, 28. He's, you know, in the prime of his life. He's doing well. He's physically fit. Aerial dominance. Loads of pace. Like you guys said, there isn't much criticism you can have.
The terrifying thing is he's still got a near decade of his career at least to go. Because defenders can go on to, you know, 32, 33 quite easily. That's terrifying. That's quite literally terrifying.
Be afraid, La Liga. Be very afraid.
Not just for La Liga football. I mean, I'm going to say a slightly hot take here, but he could retire with a better career than Ramos has. Like, in terms of trophy wins, he could retire as a more decorated defender, which is terrifying.
Not just more decorated, but with Sergio Ramos, you really do have to take the good with the bad.
Yeah, you have to take sometimes that, yeah, while he might score a goal in the final, he's also capable of getting himself sent off for absolutely no reason.
Yeah. Yep, and just, you know, he's a red card generating machine, which that has never been
any different. We've got used to it.
a part of Varane's game, and Varane just looks disciplined. He looks calm. He looks level-headed. You know, he looks like he's got the mind of a 32-year-old on the body of a 25-year-old, which, you know, Sergio Ramos, on the other hand, even as he's getting up there in the age, still occasionally chooses to act like he's 21 years old and is, you know, getting into a bar fight. Like,
isn't that the joy, though? That's like the persona of Sergio Ramos's.
Yes, but it also entails me ripping my hair out sometimes.
Like, that's what he is. Like, he's just, he's an OG. He's a gangster, a menace on the pitch. I'm not agreeing with his stupidity at times, but I feel like that's what makes Ramos Ramos, and that's
Yeah, no, I do agree with you. That is that you do have to kind of take it because it is part and parcel of the package, but I think defense, as just an out-and-out pure defender, I do think Varane is a superior defender, generally speaking. In terms of his consistency and his just his ability to actually be a defender.
We've talked about this on the podcast before, and we never intend for this to come off as nationalistic or racist or anything like that. But just for the simple fact, do you think it is possible for Rafa Varane, if he continues on this same path, sort of this trajectory that he's been on over his last 25 years of life, if he continues this on forward, do you think it's possible for him to be bigger than and more loved than Sergio Ramos, even though Ramos is Spanish?
Asking the question, no. I think the reason Ramos is so loved is just because of the way he is. That, and he's been through, you know, many eras of the club, essentially. Don't forget, this guy actually played on the same field as Zidane at one point. That's bloody terrifying. The fact that he fielded with Zidane while Zidane was also in the dugout, you know, some years later.
Yeah, I also think that players are made, and their reputations are made through iconic moments. What fans remember from players is, at the end of the day, it's not statistics, it's not, you know, tactical things. Fans remember moments, and we remember the moments that stand out to us. 92-48, the Decima was so historic for Real Madrid, and it would not have happened without Sergio Ramos. He put the team on his back, and forever just became the icon of Real Madrid during that era, of this Champions League winning Real Madrid. He's almost sort of the genesis moment of that, when all hope was lost in that final, when it looked like things were going to go the other way, when it looked like Real Madrid was going to let the Decima slip out of the grasp one more time. Sergio Ramos made the difference. And so it's going, if Rafa Varane is going to overtake that, he has a lot of work to do, and it may require a similar iconic moment to be able to fully, you know, cause the fans to change their attitude about where they exist in the relative hierarchy of greatness. But I mean, we're also, you know, comparing one really great thing with another really, really great thing. So the margins are kind of fine here.
Well, we've unpacked a whole lot about a whole load of things. Before we wrap up, though, we did promise we would talk about tomorrow's match against Barcelona.
Do we have to?
Yes.
It's a simple
question. I'm still hopeful, damn it.
simple questions. What is the key to tomorrow's match for a victory?
Don't collapse for 23 minutes. Simple as that.
All right. I like the next.
I think finishing the match as strong as we start the match. Real Madrid are good against Barcelona of putting the intensity on at the beginning of the match. You know, it would help if we finish some of those shots, but really the difference last game during the Copa del Rey was not just in finishing the shots, it was in keeping the mental composure once the second half started and once things got difficult. Because once things got difficult, it seemed that Real Madrid just absolutely crumbled under the pressure and was not able to apply the same intensity that they had from the first moment of the game throughout the end of the game. So I think for me, you know, it goes back to that consistency thing that we're lacking this season. If Real Madrid can put in a good performance over 90 minutes rather than over 45, 50, 60 minutes, then we stand a chance. But, you know, it's yet to be seen whether or not this Real Madrid squad is capable of that against the top level of opponents this year.
Well, hopefully Real Madrid does get the result tomorrow, because that would mean a huge boost to any chances of winning the La Liga title. Of course, it looks a little bit out of reach as of right now, but as my weird optimism always speaks to me in the back of my head, nothing is impossible, and this can be won until it's mathematically impossible. So yeah, I think that's it. If you don't know, though, Real Madrid sit at 48 points in third place, and Barcelona is at 57, of course, in first place. This podcast was 50 minutes. We probably swore that we'd never do one this long again, but it was so rich and so good, and there's just a whole load of just great stuff in here. I'm probably going to end up splitting this up and posting it several times because it was that great. So many hot takes from both of you. Hassan, I guess thanks for showing up. Whatever, it doesn't really matter. You're always here anyway. But Alex, thank
you. What a jackass.
I love you too. Alex, seriously, thank you so much for joining the podcast. We hope to have you back. It was super awesome to get your really unbiased, more wise opinion. Dr. McVeigh, thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. You know, you all keep doing all the awesome stuff you're doing for the Real Champs. This was something that I was involved in for, you know, over a year, really trying to build the site up. And so I love seeing that, you know, all of that hard work has not been wasted and that you all are still continuing to do great things, putting out awesome content, and really being a voice for fresh takes and fresh criticism and, you know, just good commentary on Real Madrid. And thank you for having me on. I'm happy to come back whenever.
Thank you so much. Austin, I just want to make sure you feel included as well. Just so
I'll chat your coin, man.
Is there anything that you need to say before we close out?
Much talk to jackass.
All right, awesome. Officially, Dr. McVeigh was here with us on the podcast. Thank you one last time.
The man, the myth, the legend.
Exactly. To those of you who have lasted this far and listened to this whole thing, thank you so much. Please share this with your friends or family. Yeah, you the A1, you the real MVP, as Kevin Durant once said a few years ago. If you don't know who he is, I'm sorry. But yeah, please share this on Facebook or Twitter or whatever. Really appreciate the support. As always, tomorrow we'll be doing a Periscope and some pretty cool post-match content right after. And I'm pretty sure Hassan and I are going to be doing another podcast. Thank you guys so much. Peace out. And as always, Hala Madrid.